Now we're holding on Membe's onward bays. By the two dots, five lines from the end of the narrow lines. The Gemara says, "Turn it up." Now we've been discussing the whole matter of a shur that kills a person. Tamur, the various dinim in that, including koifer. Now in that connection, when the Torah first introduces the concept, it mentions that if the shur kills a vehemis ish, turn it up on me. Learn in a brisa. Vehemis ish oi isha. The pasuk says that what happens if the shur kills a man or a woman? So then the pasuk says that so first actually you have the first pasuk there actually starts by saying that if the shur kills a person, then when they're a tam, then the shur gets skila. Then the pasuk continues. If it's a shur that's habitually gored, meaning that's a muad, and it does that, the hamis isha isha, and kills a man or a woman. So both psukim, it mentions a man or a woman. So here by the muad again, it mentions a man or a woman. So Omer Rabbi Akiva, v'chi ma bozel olam deinu. What is that pasuk coming to teach us? Im l'chayev ala isha ki'ish, is it just that? Is it just that that the person is equally chayev in the various consequences if the victim was a woman as much as a man? You don't need that. The earlier pasuk, the pasuk before that, already says if the shur gores a man or a woman. So why does the second pasuk need to repeat the man or a woman? Ela lahakish isha la'ish. Therefore, says Rabbi Akiva, it comes to make a hekish between a man and a woman. Meaning that between a woman and a man, and we learn from that ma ish nizok of the yershav, by a man the nizokin are going to go to his yershim, because first of all, if the man is killed, if there's going to be a koifer as there is by a muad, then of course it's going to go to the man's yershim because it can't go to him, he's dead. But also the point is, in general, anything that a man has, any assets a man has, can be bequeathed to his children. So Rabbi Akiva says, so ma ish nizok of the yershav, af isha nizakel the yersheha. The same way, if there's a nezek to a woman, then the same way it goes to her yershim. The point being, in other words, that her husband doesn't yarshim. We often have, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara now, we often have that a woman is yarshim by her husband. But here we don't say that. Here we say it goes to her yorshim, which is to say, in other words, to her children, or after her children if she has, or to her or to her or, to her, or her father or her brothers or whatever if she doesn't have any children. So Rabbi Akiva is saying that's what you're learning from this pasuk. So the Gemara says, "So Rabbi Akiva la yoris labal." So you're telling me then that Rabbi Akiva holds that the husband does not yaushin. Now you have like this. There is a concept that the husband yaushins his wife. However, there's a machlokas in Bava Basra whether that kind of yerusha is daraisa or drabon. So now it sounds like Rabbi Akiva is saying minatura, a husband doesn't yaushin his wife. Therefore, it's going to go to the owner. Therefore, it's going to go to her birth family. So is that so? Does Rabbi Akiva really hold that way? V'hatanya, we learn in a brisa. On the contrary, when it says in the discussion of Nachlois and Parshas Pinchas, so it lists all of the relatives who yarshins who, and the pasuk says that the pasuk says v'yorash oisa, he yarshins her, or the word oisa can in context that word v'yorash oisa. The context is saying if a person has no children and no brothers and no father's brothers, etc., then you give it to his nearest relative. You give it l'she'eroi, to his relative, mishpachtoi, from his family, akoreveilav, that's the closest to him, v'yorash oisa, and that person yaushins it. However, we're doushing over here. Oisa also means her. So it means that he yaushins her, mikan sha'bal yorishas ishtei, divrei Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva says, from here we learn that a husband yaushins his wife. Meaning, Rashi points out, you can't, now on the surface, first of all, because the word is, for the vort is, that the word she'eroi in the pasuk, that you should give it to she'eroi, we understand the word she'eroi to mean his wife. Just like we find the word she'eroi literally means his flesh, and husband and wife are levasar echad. They're one. They're considered one flesh. In the same way that we have, for example, by a kohen, where he's all when he gives the list of relatives that he's able to become tamei to, it mentions she'eroi akorev elav, and they also means his wife. So here, Rabbi Akiva says, now Rashi explains, it doesn't mean that the wife yarshens her husband. On the contrary, the pasuk makes it clear by saying mishpachta, it has to be somebody from his mishpacha, and in Torah terminology, mishpacha includes only the father's side of the family. So that's why bechlal you have that brothers who share the same mother don't yaushin one another. Anyway, the point is that therefore, so no, what we mean is we take those words, the yorash oisa, sort of we take them out of their context, and we say that we parse the pasuk like this. You have this person died without children and without brothers, etc. So in a satamas nachalosai, then you give his nachla to the closest member of his family. In addition, as far as his she'era, as far as his wife, who's close to him, the yorash oisa, he yaushens her. So from there, Rabbi Akiva learns that a husband yaushens his wife. The Gemara discusses this in Baba Kama. Is that really how Rabbi Akiva is going to parse the posik? It almost amounts to like taking the posik and carving it up with a knife and splitting it up, whatever. The Gemara has a whole discussion about it over there. But the point is, Rabbi Akiva holds that midaraisa, a husband does yaushen his wife. So why all of a sudden is he saying over here that the husband does not yaushin the nizokin or the koifer for his wife being killed by a shur? To be sure, the Rashba points out the Gemara could have just given a very simple answer, just the opposite. Rabbi Akiva does hold that, but he's saying here the Torah has to tell us a pasuk to tell us that this is an exception to the rule. However, the Gemara is going to explain that anyway, by a different answer, that even if we say that, yes, he usually yashins her, the koifer is different. So Omer Shlokish, Loy Omer, Ella B'Koifer. You know something, Rabbi Akiva is only talking about only by koifer. There's a specific reason for him to say that the husband doesn't yashin. Because the koifer, by definition, is paid only after the person dies. That's the definition of koifer. The shur, who is a mu'ad, killed, and the shur is already a mu'ad, and therefore the owner has to pay a koifer. So therefore, v'havalei roi. So it comes out, while the wife is alive, then it's considered only something roi. It's something that is that has a possibility of coming, but it hasn't actually come into her possession yet. When we say that a husband yaushens his wife, it only includes things that it doesn't include things that are roi, only things that are muhzak. Meaning muhzak is any property that she owns while she's alive, then the husband yaushens it. But here we have only something that's roi to come after she dies, then the husband doesn't yaushen. So now Tosfos points out there is actually in that sugya in Baba Basra, the Gemara learns that from that Gemara learns that concept from a different pasuk. However, the point is that the difference is that there we're talking about something which conceivably could be roy or could be muhzak, and the Torah is telling you that the husband doesn't yaushin it when it's roy. Here we're talking about something that by definition is always roy. So therefore. And after all, on the other hand, it's caused by something that happened. But by definition, it's caused by something that happened while she was alive. So therefore, you'd think it's different, and therefore, you need a special pasuk over here to tell us that it's not so. And in fact, the husband doesn't yashin it. So my timer. Why indeed do we say that the koifer is only after the person dies? Meaning, now what's the question? What do you mean? I mean, well, when else are you supposed to say the koifer? You could say maybe what it means is if the pasuk says behemis, but fine, you would say amduhu. You would say if based in evaluated after the animal attacked her and evaluates that she's most likely going to die, maybe at that point we should already make the owner of the shor pay the koifer. No, we don't say that. Because Omakura, the pasuk says, "Vehemis isha isha." If it kills a man or a woman, so actually kills, not just that there was an oimid, then Asher yisak of a gambol of yumas. Then the shur gets skila, and the owner is supposed to be chayiv misa, which means, in other words, that he's chayiv misa b'deshamayim. And then in Kofar Yushas Olav, and then a Kofar instead is imposed on him, and he's potter from Misa B'deh Shemayim. So we see that everything only kicks in after, we see that everything kicks in only after the victim dies, because first it says Behemis, and then Hashor Yisakol, and only then does it mention the Kofar. So in other words, now we're saying, so first we thought that maybe the Behemis doesn't mean, means I'm dual the Misa, but now we're saying that, look, obviously you obviously can't say just based on an oimed that the shur should get skila, and therefore, since the pasuk is putting it in that order, then only after the shur, only when the shur is getting skila, and then we're saying the owner should have been chayim misa b'dei shemayim, only then is it kofer. So we see that by definition the kofer happens only after she dies. On the other hand, as we said, as Tosfos had said, the fact is the kofer is caused by something that necessarily had to happen while she was alive. Therefore, the Gemara is thinking that that it might have been different than regular roi, and maybe the husband should yashin it. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva is saying that's the words behemis isha isha, teach us not so. All right, the Gemara asks of a nizokin like Omer Rabbi Akiva. So you're telling me that by other nizokin, Rabbi Akiva does not hold that with other nizokin, Rabbi Akiva also holds the husband doesn't yaushin them. You're telling me not so. You're telling me only by kofer is Rabbi Akiva saying that. V'atanya, we learn in a brisa. If a person hits a woman and she miscarries, which we've been talking about the last day or two, you have the concept that the Torah says of dmei vlodis, that the assailant has to pay the difference in her value between how much she was worth while she was pregnant and how much she's worth now, and that difference is called dmei vlodis, and he pays that. We're gonna deal with the dinim with the details of that din more in the next parak. So Braisa says here. So now you have there's the fact that she herself was injured, and now she herself is permanently going to be worthless because of the injury that she was caused. That's the definition of nezek. So that plus the tsar goes to her. So those go to her. Or dmei vlodis labal, and the dmei vlodis, the difference in value between whether she's pregnant or not, that goes to the husband. Tosfos points out that now what happened? What about ripui and sheves? Very often it's going to happen. Ripui you don't really need. She miscarried. That's that. And there's not really much sheves any more than there would have been if she had given birth normally. If she had given birth normally, she would have needed a certain amount of time off work. So now it's also so you can't really be mechayivim for sheves. And Tosfos says ripui it may be the case she doesn't really need either, because again, especially because she would have needed ripui when she gave birth normally anyway. It's not like necessarily she needs anything extra now. But as far as nezek and sar, So the fact is, there is a nezek. There is that now she's on a permanent basis she's going to be weakened, and therefore there's nezek involved. And as far as tsar, she surely has tsar by miscarrying in this way rather than having a normal birth. We don't mean, by the way, a mental tsar. We mean an actual physical tsar. Later on in the Masechta, when we deal with these concepts of what happens when one person injures another person, then we're going to talk about how exactly we evaluate each of these things, how we evaluate nezek and how we evaluate tsar and so forth. Anyway, but that's why Tosfos says that's why we're mentioning nezek and tsar specifically rather than the other ones. As far as Boishas, Tosfos points out that we're talking about, again, the context of the Pasuk is that two people are fighting, and then one of them injures a pregnant woman, so then he didn't mean to hit her, so therefore he'd be potter from Boishas. Anyway, a different answer. Tosfos at Rabbeinu Peretz says that the Boishas, we find in the Gemara in Ksubas, is actually split between her and the husband, and the Braisa didn't want to really get into that detail. Anyway, the point is that the Braisa says the basic thing is that the nezek and the tsar goes to her, the dmei vlodis goes to the husband. Now, continues the Braisa, ein habal, if the husband is not there, meaning the husband died after the injury took place, So then, noisin le yoshev. Then you give the dmei vlodis to his yoshin. Ein ha'isha. If the woman is no longer around, so she died afterwards. Now, if she died directly of this blow, then you have when the pasuk says that v'im osin yia, and then you have an asata nefesh tachas nefesh, and you have the machlokas in the Gemara Sanhedrin, which we've discussed before, whether nefesh tachas nefesh means that the person who hit her is actually executed by Beis Din because, or at least should be chayiv misa if there were edim v'hasra, because we would say even though he intended to kill somebody else and killed her, he'd be chayiv misa. Or would we not say that? Would we say that he's potter from misa and then nefesh tachas nefesh would mean that he pays money? Whatever the case, the point is here we mean ein ha isha. We mean she died of some unrelated thing after. So then, noisin, it's supposed to be he gives the money, liyosheha, to her yoshin. Now we see that we're saying to her yoshin, not her husband. That's why the Gemara is bringing this in over here. So Agos Habach points out, in other words, what the Gemara is saying. In other words, if the husband is dead, then you give the dmei vlodis to his yoshin, not to the woman. If the woman is dead, then you give the nezek and sire to her yoshin. So we see, so never mind koifa. We see that other kinds of nezakim go to her yoshin and not to the husband. Is the point the Gemara is making. Continues the Braisa, Hoisa Shifcha v'nishtachara. What happens if the woman was a Shifcha when she became pregnant, and then by the time she, and then by the time the injury took place, she became a Shifcha m'shuchreras, and now which is basically like a Gioras, or actually says what it means is that she was a Shifcha m'shuchreras. And now she's married to an Eved Meshuchra, and she became pregnant. And the point is, like any Ger, they don't really have relatives. A Ger doesn't really have their birth family is not considered their relatives in Halacha. So if she's a Shifcha Meshuchreras, and her husband is an Eved Meshuchra or some other kind of Ger, or she's a Giyoris, and she's married to and pregnant from a Ger, what happens now if, so Rashi explains that we're talking about now if both she and her husband are dead. So now there's nobody to Yarshin, because there's no, they don't have any heirs unless they have other children. So then Zocha, so then the person who injured her is Zoycha in the money. In other words, there's nobody to pay it to. So meaning, in other words, Rashi says, if she was a Yisraelis, then there were always Yoshim, because you always have, you go up the family tree as far as necessary in order to find a Yodish, but when it comes to a Giyodis or a Meshuchreres, or a Ger and a Meshuchre, then you don't have that. Rashi also adds, we're going to learn in the next perek, if she was a Shifcha when he injured her, then he'd be chayev in Dmei Vlodis and in everything else, and he'd give it to her owner, as we're going to learn in the next perek. But here we're talking about where she was already a Meshuchreres when the injury happened. Anyway, that's all according to Rashi. Tosfos points out that you don't really necessarily need to say that she's, when we're saying over here Nishtachra, we're saying that she was freed. For that matter, Tosfos says actually really the same din would apply if she was a Yisraelis and she's married to a Ger. Given that the Dmei Vlodis go to the husband, then now, again, the husband has died without Yoshim. And again, as we said before, wife doesn't Yoshin her husband in Minat Torah, then the Umid Rabbanon. So therefore, there's nobody to Yoshin it. The Gemara is mentioning, Tosfos says, the Gemara is mentioning Meshuchreres, because normally that's how it is. A Gioris marries a Ger, a Meshuchreres marries a Meshuchre. People tend to marry people who are similar to them in social status. But in fact, Tosfos says the din that we're talking about over here actually would apply even if it was Yisraelis who married a Yisraelis who married a Ger. Anyway, so that's Tosfos mentions that point. But then the Gemara says that that Tosfos says that no, it doesn't really work that way, because the fact is, in the next parak, we're going to talk about that the husband, when the husband was zeuched may vlodis, and then he died, then we have the dinim of that the person is potter. So you can't say over here he wasn't zeuched in them yet because he died before it happened. So therefore, Tosfos prefers Rashi's explanation that what we mean is we're not talking about Yisraelis. We are, in fact, specifically talking about a Giyoris or a Meshuchreres, and her husband is a Ger or a Meshuch. Anyway, the point is that we see from this Braisa. Now, this Braisa doesn't have Rabbi Akiva's name on it. It's true, but Rabbi Akiva is the one who deals with this whole matter and talks about the husband yarshining or not yarshining his wife's nezakin. So therefore, we assume that this Braisa is authored by Rabbi Akiva. In fact, Chita Mokobetza says it comes from Shimon Atimni, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. Anyway, the point is that we're saying that if the woman is dead, you give it to her yoshim rather than to her husband. So that implies that, and then we said if she has no yoshim, then he's potter. So in that case, then that would imply that all nezakin don't go to the husband; they go to her yoshim. Where we said before, Rabbi Akiva would say ordinarily a husband yoshims his wife. But we're saying that in this point, we're saying when it comes to koifer, specifically, the Torah spells out behemis isha isha and tells us that no, in that case, we don't do that. But why? If we're saying that concept applies to other nezakim as well, where is Rabbi Akiva getting it from there? So the answer is Omer Rabba begrusha. So Rabba says, because the Braisa is not talking about where the husband's dead. The Braisa is talking about where the husband divorced her after the injury took place. So now he doesn't yaushin her at all. When they were still married, and then when she died, then maybe he does yaushin her. And Rab Nachman says the same thing, that the Braisa is not talking about when we say ein habal, we don't mean that he's dead. We mean that he divorced her, and therefore he's out of the picture. So Rashi points out the point is that he divorced her after the injury. So therefore, so at the time of the injury, sure, he would have been entitled to it, but then he divorced her, so therefore he forfeits it, and therefore it goes to her yoshim. So the Gemara says, Amri, so they asked the question, to Grusha Nami Tiflig with Mei Vlodis. Okay, but then in that case, the Grusha should also at least have a, what do we mean that it would have been Shayach to the husband? She should be getting them as well. She should be getting them, because the whole point, Dmei Vlodis goes to the husband, because the Pasuk mentions that Kasha Yoshis Ala Bala Isha. So only when he's her husband is he entitled to her. Only when he's her husband is he entitled to them. He's divorced, so therefore they're not anymore. So therefore we should say that. Therefore we should say that he gets them. Therefore, what's this expression? Tifloig literally means that she should divide it. In fact, the Rashba says that the correct gerusha should be tishko. She should take them. But whatever, she should get the Dmei Vlodis. Why are we saying that the husband should be entitled to it? Tosfos actually wonders then, okay, but I mean the Vlodis are not an object that you should say that we can talk about who's Zoicha and them and not. So Tosfos leaves the question open. There are opinions about it later in the next parak when we talk about these dinim. But anyway, the point is the Rashba gives an explanation that you should be considering that when the husband is dead without yoshim, so she should be zoichen it as if it was something from Hefker. So anyway, the question is though, but the Braisa is saying that it goes to him, and then we're saying that in Eina Baal, loisin the yoshim, that if the husband's dead, you give those dmei vlodis to his yoshim. But why? If we're talking about where they're divorced, then why should the husband have any share in them at all? She should be getting it. So the answer is Amar Papa. No, Hatorah zichsev mei vlodis labal afilu baal le'abaznus. The fact is, says your Papa, the Torah says that the husband is entitled, the father of the children, is entitled to the to the Dmei Vlodis, even if they were never married, even if there was only Znus involved. So all the more so here where they were married and then got divorced. My time, Omakro Kasha Yoshis Allah Baal Isha. The Pasuk says that he has to pay according to what the Baal of the woman imposes on him. So we're understanding the word Baal almost as though it was a boil, as though we're saying it doesn't matter whether he's her husband or not, because then it would have used the word Isha or something like that. Baal or Isha implies the one who had relations with her and fathered the children. Or the Ra'ah brings the fact that it could have said Baila, and instead it said Baal Ha'isha. So therefore, it means even if he's not really her Baal, even if he's only her Boil, nevertheless he's entitled to Dmei Vlodis. Tosfos points out, brings from a Yerushalmi that no, we still do learn from the word Baal that it would have to be that he's somebody who's capable of being her Baal, meaning that Kedushin would be Tosfos. If, for example, the Yerushalmi brings that if it was a matter of an erva, where for example the woman was his mother or her sister, then we wouldn't call that Baal, because then he's not even Roy to be her Baal. So therefore, so by saying Baal Isha, the Pasuk is implying that he's always entitled. So therefore, yes, we can say that Ein HaBaal, if the husband is not in the picture, meaning because he divorced her, nevertheless, the Dmei Vlodis still exist, and they go to him, and if they die, and if he dies before they're paid, then they go to his Yoshin. But not if he had died, not if when the money had been paid, in the case, though, where he had died, where we would say that the money does in fact go to her. So yes, Rabbi Akiva usually would say that the husband, Rabbi Akiva usually would say a husband yarshens his wife minatora, and only by koifu do we say that now. The Gemara asked. So the Gemara asks, "V'noikma l'rabba." So instead of having to say that the Braisa is talking about a case where they were divorced, why does the Braisa say, you could have it, the money has already been collected for the Nezik and the Tsar. She didn't yet receive it. But nevertheless, the Beis Din already collected the money. And then at that point, that would be considered Rory. And we said before, the husband doesn't Yarshin Rory. According to Rabbah, we would say that kind of thing would be considered, we would say it would be considered Roy, meaning we have Machlokas, Rabbah and Rab Nachman, as the Gemara is going to discuss over here, whether when Beis Din collects from a person who owes money to pay something, is that considered Roy or is that considered Muchsek? It's Negeya as far as a husband Yarshining from his wife. It's also Negeya as far as the double portion for a Bechor. Anyway, so according to Rabbah, so whether we follow Rabbah or Rab Nachman, we could find cases where this works. According to Rabbah, we would say the case is that Beis Din collected money from the Mazik for the Nezik and the Tsar, but it didn't actually reach her yet, and Rabbah would consider it Roy. Or Rab Nachman could go to Shagavu Karka, or according to Rab Nachman, who doesn't hold that, Rab Nachman holds that if they collected money, then it would already be considered Muchzak, because money is Metaldlin. So Rab Nachman talks about the case where they collected Karka for the purpose, and that's not Biyada yet. And in fact, the Omer Rabbah, Govu Karka Yeshloi, Govu Mois Einloi, as in fact, we find that Rabbah says if they collect Karka on behalf of a payment for a debt that was owed to their father, then it's considered Muchzak because already it's Meshubad to him, and therefore therefore a Bechor would get a double portion of it. But if they collected money to pay it, then he wouldn't get a double portion because it's considered only Roy by Bechor. You also have this concept of Roy versus Muchzik. So Rabbah says that money is considered more Muchzik and land is considered more Roy. Oh no, the other way around. Rabbah says that land is considered Muchzik because he has a shibur on it. Money, you don't have a shibur on Metalplin. Therefore, that's considered more Roy. Rab Nachman says the other way around. If they collect money to pay off the debt, then it's considered muchzak, because It's the same thing. You borrowed money, you're paying back money. But gov karka ain loy. But if you collect karka, then the bechor doesn't get a double portion of it because the father didn't actually have the karka in his possession. So it's considered it was only that the father had a shibud on it, and therefore it's considered roy. So the same machlokas would apply over here as far as the husband yashining from his wife. So we should say the same thing. We could be talking about where they collected money or collected karka to pay for her nezek and sar, as the case may be, and the respective amaroyim, Rabba or Rav Nachman, would say that each of them, there's a case where it's going to be considered only roy, and therefore, as we said before, the husband doesn't yaushin from his wife and roy, only from muksa. Tosfos deals over here with certain details within that, what exactly Rabba's opinion is, what exactly Rav Nachman's opinion is, whatever. The point is that the point is that we do have those two possibilities. In fact, Tosfos says that maybe only by a loan, you could say, Rav Nachman is saying, you borrowed money, you usually pay back money, therefore that's considered more muhsek because it's still considered that it's the same thing that he lent. Whereas over here, we're not talking about a loan, we're talking about nezek and sar, so therefore you could say over here that, really according to Rav Nachman, we could say that it would apply to money as well, but then again, Tosfos says maybe not. Anyway, the point is, why were we forced to say that the case of the Braisa, where we said she's entitled to Nezek and Sar, but then we said if she dies, it goes to her Yoshim rather than her husband. We said the case is where she and her husband are divorced. Why don't we say instead that they're still happily married when she died, but then the collection was done with Karko with Mois, and according to Rabbo or Rav Nachman respectively, that would be considered Roy, and the husband doesn't Yoshim. So the answer is Amri. The answer is Hani Mila Livnei Ma Rova Libid Rabbanon, because all of that discussion is only according to the Bnei Ma Rova, only according to the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael, within the opinion of the Chachamim. Meaning that you have this point that this point when what kind of thing a Bechor Yashin's from, what's considered Roy and what's considered Mukhsa, you have a Machloikas in Baba Basra over there about. You have a case where there's a loan, where there's an outstanding loan that involves ribis. We don't have to be talking about where there was an issue involved, but pashtus, we could be talking about where their father lent money to a goy and is entitled to collect ribis on it. Anyway, you have a machlokas there in Bava Basra. Is that ribis considered now? That ribis only continues to be paid after the father died, and you have a machlokas over there. Is that considered something that the bechor would get a double portion of? So you have the rabbanon say over there that they say that the bechor is not going to get a double portion of that ribis. Because Rebbe will say that it does, because he says it's shvacha de b'meila, even though it's only roy, but nevertheless it's something that automatically comes as a result of the outstanding loan. So now when Rabba and Rav Nachman are explaining, so now you have the Gemara discusses over there what the Bnei Ma'arava, what the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael said on that point. So Rabba and Rav Nachman are discussing within that. When we're saying that you're collecting the milva, what does it mean as far as whether the milva was paid with money or with land? Which one is considered roi and which one is considered mukhsa? But all of that is only according to the rabbanon. According to Rebbe over there, you're collecting even the ribis. So you're collecting even any shevach that comes from Mela, that comes on its own. So over here says the Gemara, ki kamri hocha ka Rebbe. Here we're talking about according to Rebbe. Who says that the Bechor is always going to get a double portion of the Shvach, certainly he's going to get of the Milva, whether it was paid in money or in land, so therefore we can't say that we would have any distinction over here, whether the Nezek and the Tsar are being paid in money or in land, so therefore we were forced to say, the only way we could make the Braisa above work, according to Rebbe's opinion, would be to say that we're talking about that the couple had gotten divorced. Meanwhile, when it comes to Koifer, Rashi says that's different. Koifer, definitely, because there's no way that it comes out Mechayim, as we said before. By definition, Koifer is only after the person died, then therefore that's not considered like a Shvach that comes Memela. And therefore, for sure, the husband doesn't yashin that, and therefore it goes to her yoshin. So to summarize, in other words, what we're saying is that normally Rabbi Akiva holds that a husband does yashin his wife, and we can even say that when the nezek then is paid, whether it's paid in money or in land, at least according to Rebbe, it's going to be considered muchzak, and therefore the husband will be entitled to collect from it after his wife dies. So the only case that we can say in which the husband is not getting that nezek and sar would be, and therefore where it goes to her, and then if she's dead, it goes to her yoshim. The only way would be if they're divorced. On the other hand, when it comes to koifer, we're saying the husband never gets it, then it always goes to her yoshim to begin with, because it's different than nezek and sar, which conceivably could have been, he could be chayiv in them while she's still alive, whereas koifer, by definition, he's chayiv in only after she dies. New discussion. Now we talked about in the Mishnah, we said that if a shur kills an eved knani or shifcha knanis, then we said the owner pays a flat fee of 30 sloim, regardless how much the eved or shifcha was worth. So now the Shlokish says, shur shahemis is eved shaloi b'kavana. If the shur killed the eved without intending to. Meaning again, you know, how can we see what the shur is intending? Obviously, we can see based on how the shur was acting. So if it did that, potter mishloshim shkolim, the owner of the shur is potter from paying the 30 shkolim. Shenema kesef shloshim shkolim yitam adona v'ashur yisakol. The pasuk says you pay the 30 shkolim and the shur gets skila. So we learn from that. Kol zman shasher b'skila habayla mishalman shloshim shkolim. Only when the shur is chayiv skila, only then does the owner pay the 30 shkolim. Ein asher b'skila, ein habayla mishalman shloshim shkolim. If the shur is not going to be chayiv skila because it didn't have kavana to kill, and that could be, Rashi adds, even as we learned before, you could have where it intended to kill another animal, but didn't intend to harm a person, and then it ended up killing him. So the shur is going to be potter when it killed shalei b'kavana. So therefore, the owner in that case, we learn from that hekesh in the pasuk that the owner is potter from the shloshim shkalim. Another din. Omer Rabba, shur shahemis ben chordin shalei b'kavana. Similarly, says Rabba, if a shur killed a ben chordin, a free yid, where there you don't have the 30 shkalim, there you have the various nizokin. If the animal is a tam, and you have and koifer, if the animal is a mord, so koifer also is not going to apply where the animal was shaloi b'kavana potter mikoifer. Shenema asher yisakol v'gamba olav yomos and koifer yushas olav. The pasuk again puts together the shur gets skila. The owner should be chayiv misa b'dei shemayim, and then if a koifer is imposed on him, then he pays that. So again, we have a hekesh between the killing of the shur. And the koifer. So therefore, same thing. Kol zman shasher b'skila b'ayla m'shalman koifer ein asher b'skila ein b'ayla m'shalman koifer. So the same thing would apply. Rashi and Tosfos point out that this would disagree with Rabbi Eliezer. We learned the other day that Rabbi Eliezer had a whole discussion with Rabbi Akiva on this topic of koifer. And we said that Rabbi Eliezer had specifically said over there, when the animal is chayiv misa, then there's no chiddush that you don't pay the koifer by a tam. We were talking about, because by a tam, if the animal is being put to death and it's also bahana, then you can't pay a koifer out of it anyway. But he was talking about when the animal is not actually being executed for one reason or another. For example, one aid, bailim, there was no kavana to kill, etc. There was no kavana to kill a person, etc. Then we said that the shur is potter from misa. Nevertheless, Rabbi Eliezer said you would be mechayev in chatzi koifer in that case, and only because the pasuk says "Vala show noki are you potter," meaning that if the animal is a muad, then you don't have that, and you pay the kosher. So clearly, say Rashi and Tosfos, then what Rabba is saying over here would only work according to Rabbi Akiva. So Ace Abaya, but Abaya says to Rabba, I have a contradiction to that. A Mishnah says in Ksubas, the Mishnah is talking about over there about various cases of Modi Meknas. In Ksubas, we had a perek over there that talked about certain dinim of Knas in connection with Onus and Mefata and all that. So you have a Mishnah that says over there, if a person says in based in Hamis Shodius Pliny, my shur killed Pliny, Oi Shodish Pliny, or my shur killed Pliny's shur, how does a mashalim up yatzma? In those cases, he pays based on his own admission, because that's not a knas. Modi b'knas potter, but this is not knas, this is mammon. My lav koifer. So when we say, what is he paying? When he says Hamis Shodius and Shamis Shodius Pliny, we must be talking about including also where he pays koifer. So now, here there were no edim. The shur is not getting skila because you need edim for that, and still he's paying. And still he's paying kofer. So therefore, you see that the kofer does not necessarily depend on the shur getting skila. And the answer is the Gemara says like dummy. No, what it means is that he's paying the actual value of the person who was killed. A shur kills another shur, then you have to pay the value of the shur. So the shur kills a person, you have to pay the value of the person. Tosfos actually wonders, in that case, what's the nafkamina? If you're paying koifer, or if you're paying domim, either way, what's the difference? If you say that koifer is dmei mazik, like we learned previously, that Rabbi Shmuel, Benoshe, Rabbi Yechim, and Breuker holds, then sure, there's a difference whether you're paying dmei mazik as koifer or dmei nizik as regular domim. But here, if we're talking about that, if we're according to the Chachamim, according to who disagree with Rabbi Shmuel and say that the koifer is dmei nizik, then what's the difference? So Tosfos says one. So Tosfos mentions, for example, what if the mazik died afterwards? The whole concept, if we say, given that we said we learned before that the koifer was meant for kapara, well, after he's dead, he doesn't need kapara anymore. Ein kapara la'achamisa. So therefore you could say domim he's required to pay regardless, because after all the person had a monetary value and you have to pay for it. But when there's koifer involved, then koifer would not apply after the mazik died. And then Tosfos goes on to discuss. So in that case, wouldn't it mean that shaloi kavana is stronger than kavana? But on the other hand, you have, listen, at least according to Rabbi Shmuel, that you're paying Dmei Mazik. If the Mazik is worth a lot more, then you're still paying the Kavona, you're still paying more. Also, Tosfos says, Dumim, the Yoshim of the victim could be Moichel on the Dumim. Koifer, they can't be Moichel on. You can't be Moichel on somebody else's Kapara. So Rambam says that when it says V'dem, Shalom Apiyatzmai, it means Dumim. So the Gemara says, "E domim ema sefer." Well, then look at the continuation of the Mishnah. Hamis shodius abdishal ploini, where the Mishnah continues that if the guy comes to Beis Din and says, "My shur killed killed somebody's eved," ainim shalom apiyatzmai, then he doesn't pay the 30 shkolim on his own because that's a knas. The e domim amai lo. If we're just talking about paying the domim, if we're not talking about paying the 30. If we're just talking about paying the 30, which kind of stands in for the koifer, then you should say he's potter from the 30, but he should be chayev for domim as well. So what do you mean ainim shalom abiyatzmai? Now the Rashba points out Rabba could have answered that Mishnah is only according to Rabbi Eliezer. But we don't really want to do that. We would rather say that the Mishnah goes like Rabbi Akiva. Anyway, especially Stam Mishnah Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Meir is a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi answers Yechilu l'shanuyelach Reish Damim Sefer Knas. I could get out of this by answering that the Reish of the Mishnah is in fact talking about paying the Damim, and the Sefer is talking about the Knas, that he's potter from paying the Knas for the Eved. However, I don't want to give you a teretz like that. That's a doichik to explain that the one Mishnah is talking about two different cases. Meaning, you could have said Tosfos teaches out that he could have said like this: that Hamis Shodius Pliny, that he's paying whatever the posik is being machai of him, namely koifer, he's paying apiatmo, but instead of paying it as koifer, he's paying it as dummy. When it comes to Avdei Shaploni, where the Pasuk is being Mechayiv in the 30 of Eved, he's never paying that up Yatzvay. So you could Zetzai in the Mishnah that way, but Rabbah says, that's a Doichak and I don't want to have to do that. Rather, Aydi V'Aydi Domim, both parts of the Mishnah are talking about paying the Domim. I, in that case, why in the first case is he Potter and there's Chayiv and the second case is Potter. Miu Ben Churin, the Meshalim Kofer up Yatzvay, by a Ben Churin, where the Shur killed a Ben Churin, and then you do have where a person can pay koifer based on his own admission. The hechidomi, what would be the case? Did he also sadi vasidu beit kotel? If Adam came to Beis Din and testified that the shur did kill somebody, v'lo yadi itam havu imud hava. However, the Adam did not know whether the animal was a tam or a mu'ad, v'om a mori the mu'ad who. So now the only thing the owner is admitting, he's not actually admitting to the killing itself. He's admitting that his shur was a mu'ad at the time. So then, mishalim kofer al piatzmo, then in that case, he's paying kofer based on his own admission, because the kofer is not a knas, so therefore we're not going to say modib knas potter. Now, where there's no edim, then xeris akosiv, you can't give the shur skila without edim. Here, one way or the other, the shur is getting skila, because even if the animal was only a tam, we still give skila even to a tam that killed. So if there were no edim at all, he would be paying domim. All that the fact that there are edim over here changes it. That now we're saying instead those domim become koifer. And the fact is the edim are saying the animal would be chayiv misa. So being chayiv misa, if the animal's a moor, then koifer enters the picture. Okay, well the owner is admitting that the animal is moor, and therefore there's koifer. Therefore we can say, says Rabbah, that we tell the owner to pay that koifer, given that the animal is getting skila, and when there's skila, there can be koifer. The only thing would be that if the animal was a tam, there wouldn't be koifer. Fine, you're admitting that it was a moor, go ahead and pay the koifer. On the other hand, so it would work even if there are no edim. So hecha deleka edim mashalim domim, because if there had been no edim, he would still be paying domim. He'd still be paying them the monetary value of where he admitted. Then he would still be paying. He wouldn't be paying a koifer, but he'd still be paying domim. And again, like we said before, there's not that much of a difference between koifer and domim. There can be some differences, as we said before, that Tosfos pointed out, but not. But the fact is, there's going to be a payment either way. On the other hand, Gabe Eved, but continues Rabba, when it comes by an Eved, She'enim Mashalim Knas Api Atzmai, by an Eved, you never pay a Knas Api Atzmai, namely, Behechidomi, what are we talking about? De'i also Eidim Vashidube de Kotel, if Eidim come and testify that the Shur killed an Eved, V'lo Yadi Tam Hava Yimuad Hava, and we don't know whether it was Tam or Muad, V'oma Mori Muad Hu, if now, at that point, if the owner says that it was a mord, loy mishtalim knas apiatzmai. Then he doesn't pay a knas based on his own admission because moidib a knas potter. So the difference is, in other words, basically, that the koifer is not a knas, whereas the 30 sloyim is a knas. So therefore, hecha delecha edim, loy mishtalim damim. So even when there are no edim, and he himself came and admitted and based in, then he's still not going to be paying al piatzmo, because fundamentally the 30 is a knas. Okay, there is some discussion among Rishonim and Achronim, Taka, why there is that difference. Why are we saying that? Why are we saying that there is that distinction between kofer versus between domim and kofer and knas? But in any case, that's what it is. In other words, where we don't find that there's a koifer or a knas, then we're not going to say that he's chayev mishum dom. There's a point that a couple of achronim make that modib knas potter. What's the reason? What's the mechanism behind modib knas potter? Now you have we've talked about before, and we're going to talk about in more detail in the seventh perek of our masechta about modib knas va'achakach bo edim. What happens if afterwards edim come? And we have an opinion that says Modi b'knas v'achakach bo edim potter. Why? Because once he was Modi and basted, then you're in a certain sense it's considered as though he already paid the knas. So that's going to make a difference over here. So when there's no edim in the first place, then if there were edim to begin with, then his hadar wouldn't be potter because there were edim already. So when there's no edim and the shur is not getting skila, you can still be mechayev him b'hadar because he wasn't potter with that. But when it comes to the shloshim shalevim, when it comes to the 30 shkalim, even if there were edim, he could still be moed b'knas and he'd be potter. So therefore, his hadar is considered something important. And therefore, now when there's no edim, then we don't charge him the knas. Whatever the case, the point is that Rabbah says that's that distinction. So therefore, that's a reason to draw that distinction between paying. So yes, you can be talking about that he is paying koifer al piatzmoy, but he's not paying shloshim al piatzmoy. The difference being. And then in the case of koifo, fine, what we're doing is we're essentially transforming the koifo into domim, whereas by the 30 of an eved, we don't do that. But we can still say the rule, says Rabbah, that only when the animal is getting skila, only then is there a koifo. So in that case, if there are no edim, he's not paying a koifo, but instead of koifo, he's paying domim instead. However, Masiv Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak, a braisa says, any case where a person is chayev when it comes to a ben chorin, so in a parallel case with an eved, he'd be chayev in koifer or misa. So you have to ask, what do you mean koifer be eved miyika? What koifer? There's not a koifer by an eved. El alav domim. Evidently, then the braisa means that. Evidently, the braisa means not koifer per se, but rather the domim. So we see that either way, you're paying domim. And so how would that fit with what Rabba just said, that with an Eved, you're never paying Domim because you don't take the 30 and transform it into Domim. So, Ika da'amri hu moisiv lo v'hu mefarik lo. Some say that an answer to that was given by Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak himself, that he had asked the question, and then he also found an answer. Ika da'amri omale Rabba, or others say that Rabba gave him the following answer. Hachi katani, the braisa means like this. Any case where the animal had kavana to kill, so the braisa is not talking about modi b'piatzmai. The braisa is not talking about where the owner comes to Beis Din and admits himself. Then you would have Rabbah is saying, like he said before, there's no domim when it comes to an eved. Then he's potter. What the braisa rather is talking about in connection with edim. When there are edim involved. So the braisa is saying, kol shachai b'men chorin b'kavona al pi edim kofer, when the animal had kavona, and therefore if the victim was a ben chorin, and it was a mord, and the edim would make it now that the owner is chayev kofer, chayev be'eved knas, in the parallel case, if the victim, instead of being a ben chorin, was an eved, then you're going to be paying knas. B'chol shachai b'men chorin shaloi b'kavona al pi edim domim, any case where the animal was shaloi b'kavona, and therefore you're not being mechayev a kofer, and you're only being mechayev domim, because the animal didn't intend to kill, so you're just paying domim, chayev be'eved shaloi b'kavona al pi edim domim. In that case, and then yes, we're saying that now if the shur instead shaloi b'kavana killed an eved, then we would say that you're paying. Then we're saying that you're paying domim. So nothing to do with the owner admitting, and nothing to do with whether we're talking about in both of those cases the animal is getting. So the difference is when it was b'kavana, the animal is getting skila. When it was shaloi b'kavana, then the animal is not getting skila. So then, fine, we can say when there are edim involved, then there's going to be domim one way or the other. But nothing to do with paying a koifer when the animal is. Rabba was saying that when the owner himself is moida, then we're pattering him from eved. But when it comes to edim being involved, then there's no difference either way. You're paying domim, and Rabbah never said anything about there being any distinction between that. Only when it comes to koifer, Only when it comes to kofa, we have kofa versus knas, then you can draw that distinction. But when the edim are saying that the animal it killed shaloi b'kavana, we don't find that there should be any difference between kofa and knas, because there is no kofa or knas in either case. So therefore, so when it comes to damim, they're both on an equal level, and therefore we're going to be mechayavim. So that's what the b'raisa means. So either Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak, who brought this b'raisa, answered it himself, or Rabba answered it, or Rabba answered to defend himself. Omale Rava, but Rava says to Rabba, Ihochi. So if you're telling me that, then there is a chiyuv when a person was killed, and even when there's koifa or knas, there's not going to be even when there are edim. So even when there's no koifer or knas, you're still going to be mechayev him for damim. Well, then forget about a shirt a minute. Ishoy shalay b'kavana. Suppose a person lit a fire and it spread shalay b'kavana. So if he did it b'kavana, Rashi points out, of course he's going to be potter kam libidrabim mine. But we're talking about that where he lit a fire in his property and it spread and ended up killing somebody else. Al pi edim, and there were edim involved. Now we learned back in the second parak that for Aish to be mechayev for killing a person would have to be where the person was tied up or otherwise unable to move, because otherwise we should expect him to have the das to get away when the fire is coming towards him. So here we're talking about that. So here you're fine. We're talking about the person was tied up or otherwise immobile. So fine, but isha shaloi b'kavana al pi edim. But if you have a person started a fire and it spread shaloi b'kavana and ended up killing a person, there were edim for it. Nishalim damim, then he should have to pay damim. Now by fire, you don't have koifer. You don't have the koifer. Only applies to a shur. But the question is, it's one thing. So we just said a shur shaloi b'kavana. Tosfos teaches out, even though there's no way of coming to koifer or knas, you're still paying damim. Well, by fire also, it can never come to koifer because koifer only applies to a shur. But nevertheless, we should still say that he's chayev damim. Tosfos points out, of course, it wouldn't for that matter. Even if now Rashi had said if the fire was b'kavana, then kom lebedirab mine. But Tosfos finds a way to say Tosfos says yes, similar to Rashi. If it was b'kavana and you're not paying, then you're not paying damim. Then that's because we have kom lebedirab mine, and we have the different opinions that we learned in the second parak. Ishoy mishum mamonoi or ishoy mishum chitzav. What's considered when there was a damage caused by fire? Is it considered his mamon similar to a shur, or would we say that it's chitzav? It's as if he himself shot arrows. So if you say ishoy mishum chitzav and that's the halacha, then you would say that he himself is considered the mazik. And then if he did it with kavana, then you're going to have kom lebedirab. Anyway, okay, well, the Gemara says, well, Rava is saying as an obvious fact that you don't pay in that case. So where does he get that from? Is it from the Mishnah that we learned, that we're going to learn later in the Masechta, which we already touched on back in the second parak? That if a person set a stack of grain on fire, if there was a goat tied to the stack of grain that got burnt, or there was an eved near the stack of grain, and they were burnt together with it, then he's still chayev to pay for the stack of grain. And for the goat, he'd be potter for the eved because the eved wasn't tied and therefore he could have run away. But Eved Kofuslay D Samafloy, but we said if the Eved is tied to the stack and therefore can't run away, or the goat is nearby, Nisrafimai, and they were burnt with it, Potter, then he's Potter. Now Potter, what do we mean? But Pashra says, well, Potter because Kom Levidabimine. It sounds like he's Potter. It sounds like he's Potter for both of them. It sounds like he's Potter for the Gdi, because the Gdi could have run away, and he's Potter for the Eved because you don't pay for an Eved only when there's a Knas involved. Meaning, in other words, Rashi explains Rava's understanding that the Mishnah over there is following the opinion that Ishoy Mishum Mamono, that we just said, that when we talk about the Nezek of Eish, fundamentally we're talking about this was your property that caused damage, similar to your Shur or any other Ovis Nezikin causing damage. And you're saying, and so therefore, and you're saying, and Mishnah is saying that he's potter. So are you going to say that Rava is getting from that, that therefore you don't pay in a case, that you don't pay Dumim in the case of Eish? Can't be. Ha'omer Rish Lakish, didn't Rish Lakish say, Kugan Shehitzis, but Gufa Shalevin, that no, the case when the Mishnah is saying, why is the person potter, is where the person actually set the fire on the body of the Eved himself. So then we have Koma Libid Abin. So only then would we say that he's potter from paying for anything because he's chayiv nisa because he committed ritzicha. But now we're talking about that. Otherwise we would say that otherwise if you'd set the fire in the stack of grain and eventually it spread to the eved, then Rish Lakish would be mechayiv him. Now we're talking according to Rish Lakish because we're saying ishe mishum mamonei, which is Rish Lakish's opinion. So you can't say that Rava is generalizing from that, that when there was a nezek caused by Eish, you shouldn't have to pay Dumim, because only in that specific case, we are komle with the Dumim, and only then are we saying that he's potter from Dumim, because he's chayiv nisa. So where is Rava getting as a general statement that a person is potter from Domim when he set a fire and it spread. The Elamei Hodetanya, are you going to say rather that we're learning it from the following Braisa? A Braisa says, Chumra be'esh mi'be'bur. There is a Chumra in the Avnezikin of Eish over Bur. We learned back in the first Perek, we were talking about the differences between them and why all of them had to be listed individually. Because Eish is moored to consume things that are regularly roy for it. For example, you set a fire and then burnt somebody else's wood, then you're going to be chayav for it, because wood is something that's normally burnt by a fire. Or davar she'ein roy lo, even something that's not roy, for example, we've learned before that if we had back in the first parak, that if a person set a fire and it ended up burning somebody else's plowed field, and now the topsoil is burned and he has to replow the field, or we said that it singed his stones and now his stones can't be used for building anymore, then he also chayev, even though earth and stones are not dover haroi for fire. Mashen can be burr, as opposed to a burr, you have a burr, you know, you're potter for certain things. You're potter for kalim, you're potter for a burr that's less than 10 tfachim, etc. On the other hand, the Braisa is mentioning that point, that chumra of Eish over burr. The ilu show Eish b'shalem is shalai b'kavona domim mashen can be burr lo katani. Now, on the other hand, the Braisa is not mentioning another distinction that would we say that Rava is deriving from the fact that the Braisa could have said that by fire you're always paying domim, even if it's shalai b'kavona, whereas by a burr you would not say that. Lo katani, we're not saying that. So therefore, is that where Rava is getting his factual statement that by Eish you wouldn't pay Dumin by deriving from that Braisa? The Gemara says why? Mashenkin Mabur Lakatani, Dumatana Vishaya. Fine, you could say the Tana left out things. The Tana didn't have to list every single distinction between Bird and Eish. In fact, back in the first paragraph, we discussed there were other distinctions between them as well that it had left out. So Rava can't be deriving from that. Ella Rava Gufa Iboyi Miboy. So as a matter of fact, we have to say it's not that Rava was saying it as a fact that there's no chiyuv of Domim when it comes to a fire, where then we'd be saying, well, where does he get that from? Rather, what it is Rava is asking the question, Isho Shalai Bakavana, me mashalam domim oloi, when a person set a fire and it spread Shalai Bakavana, and it killed somebody else in a different property, is he paying domim or not? Mia minen gabi shur who'd kavonim shalom koifer shalom kavonim shalom damim. Did we say only by a shur do we have that distinction that if it was b'kavona he's paying koifer when the ox was a moored? And shalom kavona we said he's paying when the ox did not intend to kill, then he's paying damim. Avol ishev de kavona lo mishalom koifer shalom kavona nami lo mishalom damim. So then when it comes to fire, then you never have koifer, because the pasuk clearly says koifer and limits it only to only and limits it only to a shur. Rashi actually explains there are a couple of ways in which we know that there's no koifer by fire. One way of looking at it is that the whole concept of koifer is said only in connection with a shur, because the pasuk says in koifer yushas olav. We've learned before that that olav meant that a person, and that when one person kills another, then there's no koifer, because olav, if the koifer is imposed on him, meaning because of his shur, not where he himself did it. So the same way over here, we could be mamayit fire from that, or because kom lebedinamimine. Anyway, the point is that, so would we say, since there's no koifer by fire, so then the same thing, there's no domim where it was shaloi b'kavana. Or on the other hand, we would say, no, the fact is, by a shur, there's shaloi b'kavana, even though there's no koifer, we establish that you are paying domim. Because we said before, maybe Rabba would say if he himself was moide and based in, then maybe not, but not when there are edim involved. Gabba isha nami, afa gabba kavana le mishalim koifer. By fire also, you could say that maybe even though kavana he's not paying koifer, shaloi kavana mias mishalim domim. Maybe if it was shaloi kavana, he didn't intend for the fire to spread. Maybe in fact he should be paying domim. So we don't know one way or the other. And the Gemara says, Teku, in fact, that question of that, now that we understand that Rava is asking it as a question rather than making it as a statement, then we leave it as Teku. We can't be sure whether in that case he would pay Domim if he set a fire in one place and it spread and killed somebody in another place, and it was Shaloi B'Kavana. So if it was B'Kavana, again, we could say, Kamu Levit Abimine, but when it's Shaloi B'Kavana, would we say that? We can't be sure one way or the other whether he'd be paying Domim. So we'll continue. So the Gemara is going to continue further with this discussion about koifer b'kavana and shalei b'kavana. We'll continue with that tomorrow. So we'll continue with that Matzah Shabbos, Bez Hashem.
Okay. What?